What would you do if you had opportunity to speak with someone who has been involved for decades on Bureau of Land Management and protecting beautiful national parks and resorts across the beautiful nation, United States of America, but also be able to do and help run so many different levels through National Park Services and being in such a lead role as a region division chief? And helping out to protect and manage, but also influence and make a positive changes. In addition to that, it's also continued to serve on the journey for Colorado Apex, helping nonprofit organizations to be successful, continuously keep giving and giving to others to thrive, specifically small businesses. Woman-owned small businesses. Without further ado, I would love to introduce you to today's guest, where we're going to depict her legacy and tremendous work she accomplished, but so many other hidden gems that she's going to share with us exclusively here today on Legacy Leader Show with Isabella Lundberg. Please welcome our great guest, Lorna. And Lorna, that is joining us here from the back, here in Denver, Colorado. Lorna
Yeah.
Gunning. Hi,
Yeah.
Lorna. How are you?
Good. Good morning. Thank you so much for inviting me to participate and have a conversation with you.
Absolutely. Thank you for being open for the conversation. As we here on Legacy Leader Show love to feature great role models that everybody asks me, who are the great role models, Isabella, who are already living and leading with their legacy and already carved a tremendous legacy, but they're not necessarily always in the spotlight or were known for others to really understand what decades of such a tremendous work carved for you. Before we go into all of this, Lorna, you came, your fellow transplant, fellow European, you came from Ireland to this country. Do you mind sharing a little bit about that piece of your history and tell us where did you venture and how does everything started on your journey?
Sure, thank you so much. Yes, I was born in Dublin, Ireland, and I emigrated to the United States when I was just about 7 years old and came with my immediate family. And it was a big transition. I'm sure a lot of people who have emigrated realized who left all of my family behind. So didn't have a lot of cousins, just had a few, but not a lot of cousins or immediate family. Left my grandparents and things like that behind. But came to the United States into Boston, the Boston area suburb of Boston, and didn't go to school right away because we came in March and didn't start school until September. So had some challenges because I missed a little bit of first grade. And so when I first started, I actually did first grade and second grade at the same time, just to kind of catch up. And sometimes kids can be a little mean, you know, when to other kids. But I had some wonderful teachers that really, you know, took the time and helped me just catch up, which I did very, very quickly, and had great experience in school. Loved learning, loved everything, every challenge that was given to me. I just kind of grabbed that and went from there to high school and then eventually to college at Stonehill College in Massachusetts, where I graduated summa cum laude, and was working at the apartment complex where I lived, and was looking for a job after graduation. Had student loans, like many kids that graduate, and somebody just came in. They were looking for an apartment, and I really tried to be very kind and help them. They had some challenges when they were moving. Their husband had cancer, and they had lost some of their furniture. So I really worked very hard to help them, and kindness, I think, always helps people. The person said, you know, if there's anything I can ever do to help you, you've been so kind to me, let me know. And I said, well, actually, I'm looking for a job. I just graduated from college. And she said, well, I work for an organization called the National Park Service. Let me see what I can do. And a few weeks later, she called and said, you know, I can get you just a temporary job, nothing permanent. And I said, I'll take anything. Somebody opened the door, somebody gave me an opportunity, and I walked right through that door. And I had never really worked in downtown Boston before and took take the train and commuter, but I just jumped on that opportunity. And that short temporary job turned into a permanent job, first in human resources, and I did that for about a year and a half. And an opportunity arose to go into another whole different career that I'd never really heard about contracting, federal contracting. So I applied to be just a trainee, a beginning person, and just took to it like a fish to water, just really, really loved it. And in that job, I learned everything, how to do construction contracting, architect engineering, supply, IT. And we also bought a lot of really interesting things. When you work for the National Park Service, you know, you buy everything under the sun. So I bought historic wallpaper for presidents' homes, historic carpet for President Roosevelt's home, did a lot of roof projects, like at the, I was on a slate roof at the top of it on the Commandant's house at the Boston Navy Yard, did a lot of projects at the Statue of Liberty, loved that. Did projects at Acadia National Park. So, and over the years just kind of grew until I, as you mentioned, I became the regional chief of contracting and property management for the region, which went all the way from Maine down to Virginia. And that was a great, great opportunity. I think I was the youngest division chief at that time. And from there, went to work for the Washington office of the National Park Service, actually. Had an interim step where I managed a software application for about 5,000 users from Maine to Guam. And then became the deputy chief of procurement and chief of procurement eventually for the National Park Service, where we were in charge of all procurement and grants and cooperative agreements for the entire program service-wide. So learned a lot there as well, and had a great experience, and then did that for a total of, you know, the Park Service, 29 years with the Park Service, and met wonderful people, saw great leaders and learned from them and watched them very closely. Also saw a couple of poor leaders and said, okay, I'm going to store that. That's something I never want to do when I become a leader. And I remember just setting my heart on, you know, goals that I wanted to have, even at the, even when I was at the very early stages of my career, there were things I wanted to accomplish, and was very happy to do that. Went over to the Bureau of Land Management, where did the same thing. I was the chief of procurement for them in their National Operations Center. And then, as you mentioned, retired and 2 weeks off, and then went to work for the Colorado Apex, where we help businesses in any level of government. I think one of the things that I learned the most, you know, was just the people that I met. And, you know, just like somebody gave me that opportunity and I grabbed it and I ran through the door with it. I tried to do that throughout my career. I have tried to open opportunities for women and men. And I'm really happy to say probably the greatest legacy I left is the people that I left that are now in significant positions throughout the government, probably because I opened the door for them, and they were smart and capable, and they, just like me, they ran through that door, and they have had, it's wonderful to sit back and look at the wonderful careers that they're having now because of maybe the opportunity that I offer them.
Wow, what amazing journey, and how impressive is. Obviously, anybody who ever moved, relocated from one school or just from one home to the next, let alone the country, and leaving family behind, and then looking to establish and adopt and adjust, since like that mindset continued through your professional and personal career and growth. But I'm really impressed to hear you were not questioning, can you do it? And where is your confidence? You just fully head on jumped in. And what's so impressive is that everybody watching and listening, these are very highly regulated institutions and have so much complexity around them. In addition to that, they're very usually at that time, and specifically now where you were involving with the federal government and government across the country, very strong male driven and dominated. How did you deal with all of that, if you don't mind sharing a little bit, and how did you build that strength and resilience to deal with the challenges you've been exposed to?
You know, I think I love to learn. As I said, even when I was a child and when I was given the opportunity to get into contracting, you know, I just love to learn that. And you're right, there were times when there were people, many a times men, that kind of tried to bully or challenge. But what I always tried to do was, I knew I was doing what was right. I wasn't doing what was convenient or what was what they wanted. So I really studied and learned the laws and the regulations. And so when I was challenged or bullied by somebody, you know, I would really just say, I'm not making a decision on behalf of an individual, whether it was somebody that was trying to bully me or an employee. I said, I'm always going to put the organization first and what is best for the organization and what is best for the people that I am supporting, the American taxpayer. And so, you know, I think so long as you are doing the right thing, I mean, sometimes, you know, I'd go home and I'd be stressed out, but I would always feel like I was doing the right thing. And I think so long as you're doing what's legally right, what is appropriate, what is not in the best interest of me or another person, but is in the best interest of an organization, which will last much longer than any of us, then I think you can withstand any of those challenges, because deep down, those people that might be trying to do that, they also are there to do the right thing. And if you're always pointing that out, or, you know, helping them to see that it's not about you, it's not about me, it's about the organization and what is best for the organization. And we're both on the same team, really. We both want to do the right thing for the organization. And I know this is your immediate need, but let's take a step back and let's do what's best for the organization, and we'll both be successful. I think it's always finding success. When I work with my clients now with the PTEC, I always say, you know, what's best? Let's find out what's best for everybody, not just the client that I'm working with, but let's find out what's best for the organization, the government agency that you might be trying to work with. I think if you always have that higher level focus, you'll never go wrong.
I love that. And that really exudes the first time when I met you, professionalism, kindness, compassion, but also extremely well-versed, knowledgeable understanding of such a strong, complex world, right? Because obviously it's not just a lot of data and information and laws that are constantly changing and updating, but it's truly also navigating what's philosophy that very few people really fully understand, and how important it is in so many ways. It's also a privilege and honor, but also how important it is to demonstrate that positivity as well as integrity and strong leadership. I'm curious, you mentioned earlier some great examples that you've been involved with property management on some historic moments. If you don't mind sharing just a little short clips of one of the biggest things that really historically for everybody watching and listening, we also have a very global audience, that it's very little known, that might be enticing for audience, as well also from the contracting side, what some of those major projects are or were to that contribute tremendously in impact, not only for United States, but others in the world.
Sure. You know, I've done a lot of different projects, and I have some parks that are truly close to my heart that I love very dearly. You know, I love all the national parks. You know, when you think about Yellowstone or the Grand Canyon, where, you know, I've been for work and projects, I kind of describe them as kind of like, you know, like a human being. They're the physical beauty of this country. But my favorite park really is the Statue of Liberty, because for me, that is the heart and the soul of the United States. That is, our message there is wonderful, you know, and did a lot of projects, did some a contract for ethnography contracts, where we interviewed people who perhaps they were getting elderly and they had actually gone through Ellis Island, and we wanted to capture their story before they passed on. And, You know, so I did contracts like that. We did, I've been up in the Statue of Liberty. I went down there to do some training and was in the Statue of Liberty when she was closed to the public. Unfortunately, there was a huge rainstorm, and I didn't realize she moves in the storm. So she was kind of swaying back and forth as I was in her at night. But just beautiful just to see her, you know, and she's just such a symbol of the United States and of immigrants like myself. And I just think that's wonderful. One of the proudest projects I had was we built an outdoor theater in Lowell National Historical Park in Lowell, Massachusetts. It is called the Boarding House Park Outdoor Theater, close to the Boarding House Park. And that's a wonderful national park if you haven't had an opportunity to go to it. You know, it tells the story of industrialization in the United States. And they have a lot of exhibits about women working there, because when the Industrial Revolution started, a lot of women worked on farms. And they said, you know, they have stories there of women who said their lives were controlled by the sun when they would get up and go and work in the farm. And many of them left that because they wanted a career. And they went to Lowell and they worked and they lived in the boarding houses. And they tell the story of where their lives went from being controlled by the sun to the bell, where they worked in the national, where they worked in the factories. And there were a lot of women were hired there. And it's a wonderful park to see that. So when I was in the region, we did a lot of projects at Lowell. We did some video contracts. So when people would come in and they would get that introduction video to the park, the outdoor theater, which was an old parking lot, and we restored it and turned it into just a beautiful outdoor park where people now can go and see concerts. And I worked with the architect engineering firm, a woman-owned firm, that designed the project, and then the construction firm. Many times when I was in construction projects, sometimes I was the only woman in the room. So sometimes I had to stand up to, you know, a lot of construction men or construction contractors and say, you know, no, this is not what you're going to do. You have to do it according, you know, to the OSHA regulations or the contract. And sometimes that was a challenge, but, you know, again, strong, you know, having the laws and the regulations to be able to do that helped. But Lowell had a lot of great parks, projects and parks at Lowell. You know, did projects at Yellow or at the Acadia National Park in Maine, which a wonderful national park. A lot of has a wonderful carriage path that you can do. And we did a lot of the design services for that. So over the years, worked with the Washington office on designing software, custom design software for the law enforcement rangers throughout all of interior. So whether it was the National Park Service, the Fish and Wildlife, so that they could share law enforcement data from one bureau to the other. Before that, they couldn't necessarily share that data. And so worked on a project with that, with a lot of law enforcement rangers. Many just became such close friends. The department, IT folks, worked with the undersecretary for law enforcement. So I had a tremendous amount of really interesting jobs, And, you know, the National Park Service, the mission of the National Park Service is that we will leave things unimpaired for future generations. So Isabella, your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren should be able to go to those parks and experience them the same way that you're experiencing them today. You know, they call it America's great idea. You know, in many other countries, a lot of the national beautiful gardens or beautiful parks were really for the royalty. The kings would build them. But these are really were really created and protected for us, the American people, and we all own a piece of those. And I'm just so proud to have been a part of that and a part of protecting that for the United States. And a lot of people, they go to the national parks and they meet the rangers and the hats. I did the contract. We did the contract out of our office for those ranger hats and uniforms. But that's wonderful. God bless them. They do a great job meeting thousands and thousands, millions of visitors every day. But there's also, thousands of us like myself that people never meet that are behind the scenes that are still doing our part to protect these resources for whether they're, curatorial pieces, documents, whether it's the land, whether it's the exhibits, whether it's the stories of the people that create, why were they created? We're all behind the scenes really playing our part to help it for the future.
Wow, how fascinating and extraordinary that journey has been for you. And I can just see not only just the tremendous success and pride, but also obviously achievements that, as you mentioned, echoes for generations to come. And a lot of things when people take for granted, right? It's such a beautiful, diverse country with all these different parks and climate and different resorts and national forests and parks. And a lot of times people don't really understand how much it takes to maintain it, to preserve it, but also to make proper improvements. And then at the same time, we're looking things, where do we, what we pride in ourselves on? And I love what you mentioned about Statue of Liberty. And as an immigrant myself, that resonates so deeply on so many levels. But I cannot, again, skip this without asking, because your success is such a profound, and I would love to, if you can share, what do you think was the most important attributes that helped you to develop your leadership and also be able to speak in such a diverse environment, or be able to talk to different backgrounds and different teams and still be able to achieve what you needed to do?
Great, great question. I think listening and learning. When I first started in contracting, I would do construction projects, and I didn't know construction. I was never in the construction industry. So, I would learn and I would read the specifications, and then I would go talk to the engineers and I would ask them a lot of questions. And I would say, I don't really understand this. Can you help explain this to me? And I'm looking at the drawings and I'm looking at the specifications, and do these agree, or are they? And sometimes I was wrong, and sometimes I would go, I think you're right. I think you might have caught something. Let's go back and correct that. Or whether it was the law enforcement. So I think people, they all come with expertise, and they are very proud of that expertise, whether they're archaeologists or engineers or IT people or architects, museum curators. And so you have an opportunity every time you engage with somebody to learn from them. And I think that's what I tried to do was, and if I was going to serve them and make sure that they got the best contract that they needed to do their mission, to do their jobs, I really had to learn from them what was their job, what were they trying to accomplish. And the more I learned, then the more I became a valuable asset to the organization. And, and so being inquisitive, being willing to learn and ask questions and listen to people. And I think I bring that forward to even today when I work with the Apex. I meet so many wonderful businesses like yours, Isabella, like businesses that are what are called small business innovative research business. My God, they're so fascinating. They're on the cutting edge of new technologies. And sometimes I don't understand because it's way above my head. We're talking extreme science, but again, it's an opportunity to learn, to talk to them. And the more I talk to them, and they're just all so happy to talk about what they're doing because they're excited about their business. And then I can kind of point them in the right direction. Let's talk about how you sell that to the government. Let's talk about how you can express that in a manner that's going to make sense to somebody like me that is not an engineer or a rocket engineer or an expert in that field. And so by my learning and my inquisitiveness, I'm also helping them to market themselves so that they can be successful. So, you know, the same skills, regardless of whether I was on the government side or now on the other side, I think you'll find that a lot of those transferable skills of learning, listening, asking questions, and then you know, I worked with one consultant one time, and he said, you probably have the fastest capability of anybody I've ever met that can take a lot of disparate information, connect the dots, and then help somebody to figure out a strategy. And so I use that skill that, thank God, he gave it to me by learning and listening. And then I can put those pieces together very, very quickly and help them find a strategy that will work for them.
That is fantastic in so many ways, because we're dealing with more than ever complexities and navigating things correctly. Sometimes it's really, we can make an error or mistake, but also just because of nature of the business, it's just so wonderful to have someone like yourself who not only been there, done that, but also understands, as you said, what's important and how to continue to carve the path and be successful. So if you don't mind, obviously Colorado Apex, it's a great organization, and it's nonprofit that is helping small businesses, which I'm super thrilled to be part of it, but also learn from the professionals like yourself and your other colleagues. But if you don't mind sharing for everybody that's also watching and listening that are not aware of federal contracting, do you mind sharing a little bit? Because obviously federal contracting and federal grants are one of the biggest opportunities for small to all or large businesses. And what do you see not only presently, but also coming in the future based on what do you see that is changing and shifting?
Yes, thank you. I think, you know, when I first started with the government, a lot of things were done in-house. People would work, you know, they would hire government people, government employees that would do the work. And I think as the government has gotten smaller, you know, even though the deficit might be getting bigger, the actual number of employees have gotten smaller, and the demands have been placed more on those. It's really a requirement. I think almost every federal agency today, even state and local, have to rely on a partnership with the business community in order to be successful. And so I think the more that we can help, that's what the Apexes do, the more that we can help these businesses be ready and available and capable of partnering with the government to be successful, I think is critical. And, you know, there are some challenges to doing business with the government, you know, and that's what we're here for. We are that interface to help you be successful. It can be daunting. It can be challenging, but we help you from the beginning right through to the very end. You know, we don't leave you at any point, and we're here for you at your discretion. You know, you don't have to meet with us every week, but if you'd like to, that's fine. We will meet with you. But, you know, there's the whole registration system. You know, how do you register if you want to do business with the federal government? And I always say the government buys everything, anything. I was at an outreach yesterday with a manufacturing businesses, and I said, you know, sometimes we sit around and we'll say, give me a topic and I'll tell you somebody that buys it. So they buy. There is nothing under the earth that the government somewhere doesn't buy. And so we can always help you find that. So the other piece is, you know, that getting registered, we kind of call it the four R's, getting registered, and whether you have a special certification, you know, whether you may be a woman-owned small business, we will help you with that. Or if you your company is in a hub zone, an area of high unemployment, we will help you with that. So we help you get all those certifications. Then the second R is that research step. You know, like I said, the government buys everything. So you don't want to target somebody that's not buying what you're selling. So where do I go? Who do I talk to? Who's really interested in what I'm selling? And that's something that we will help you do. We will help you do that research, find out who's buying it, who did they buy it from in the past? How much did they pay for it? And who is that successful vendor? So maybe there's a subcontracting opportunity. Maybe there's other opportunities. Then, you know, when you're ready, you say, I found this solicitation and I want to do business with the government. And I think I can really, I can deliver on this. Well, we're there to help you right through that. So we'll help you look at that solicitation and say, this is what the government's looking for. And what's really great when you work with us, because we have been with the government, I can read a solicitation and I can know this is, you know, this is a firm fixed price or this is a best value. All these terms that you're all going, oh my gosh, what does this all mean? I know exactly what it means. And I can say, this is what will help you be successful. This will what will help you win. So we'll help you review your proposal so that you will have the very best chance of success. And then if you win, we don't leave you then. We're right with you. The last R is just retain. You want to retain, just like in the commercial world, you want to retain that client. You want to make sure you do a great job. You want to make sure you have great past performance. And you want to make sure that the government says, my gosh, I want to come back and work with that firm again because they did great work. They're reliable and they have great past performance. So we stay with you all the way. And I have many clients that are in the midst of contracts and they'll call and say, I just got asked to do this, a change order. I got, what is CPARS? I'm like, don't worry, we're here for you. We're here to help you all the way through, which is a wonderful, wonderful, really aspect to have. And it's all free. It is all free to you, our clients. And what I say is, you know, sometimes people complain about government, but I always say, these are your tax dollars at work for you. This is one of the best things that the government does. It helps. And there are, you know, I know we're talking here in Colorado, but there are 97 APEXs across the country. So it doesn't matter what state or what area you're in, there's one that's right close by that's available to help you. So I always say to any business, and especially to women-owned businesses or minority-owned businesses, definitely, you know, take advantage of these. And so many of our clients, they come and they say, oh my gosh, I wish I'd found you 3 years ago. Where were you? I didn't really realize you were out there. And I paid somebody to help me. And to now find out you guys do it all for free. Oh my gosh. You know, so definitely we want to get that word out that we're here. We're available to help you. And for me, I feel like the government invested a lot of time and money in me and in my education and in my experiences and in my career. And for now, this is my opportunity to give back and to help businesses, help people. And I get as much joy from their success as they do. I'm just so happy. I always tell my clients, oh, you know, keep in touch. Tell me if you win because I'm rooting for you. I want you to be successful.
I love the passion and drive and your powerful sharing because, right, you're right, so many people don't know what resources are available and so many of us have been in such a hard trajectory of paying external quote-unquote experts, but then making many mistakes or just simply not being fully understanding, or sometimes we think this means one thing and in reality means completely something else. And also, I know that a lot of times people sometimes take things lightly and these regulations, policies, procedures exist for the reason. I know it's hard to navigate sometimes, but I just love that compassionate and skilled and capable people like yourself exist. And it's so great for everybody also watching and listening that you are nationally available for so many different, obviously, states and cities where people can truly leverage that and utilize. But one obviously main thing for me is working so long for large corporations and consulting arena, but also seeing them being entrepreneur in small businesses. They're the blood of US economy as well. Small businesses are blood of other economies across the world. And I'm so glad to see how much is dedicated for that to optimally not only help companies to survive when it's a difficult challenge in times, but also to thrive.
Yes, yes. And, you know, the government has really identified, especially the Department of Defense, has identified our industrial base, as a, you know, a national security issue. That's one of the reasons I was at the manufacturing outreach yesterday, was we really want to encourage these businesses. And so many of them are creative. And, you know, we have the brightest minds in this country that that are always just, you know, challenging themselves to come up with new ways. And we want them to do business with the government, with Department of Defense, with, we need that. We need that industrial base. We need these. 97% of the companies in the United States are small businesses. And so, you know, there are always opportunities for doing business. You know, I'm not going to say it's easy, and you're not going to say that you're going to talk to me on Monday and you're going to have a contract on Friday. You know, you have to be willing to learn and to put in that work. And as the presentation that I did yesterday, I kind of compared it to doing a house, you know, building a house. You start with the foundation and then you build the walls and the chimney, and before, you know, so it's going to take some time and effort. But I feel for businesses, you know, this is an opportunity for them not only to diversify their portfolio to include, you know, government work as well as commercial work, but it's also an opportunity in many ways to kind of be a good citizen and support your country. And especially when you have great people like yourself that have such knowledge and experience, you know, you want to be able to share that and help the agencies and help the government and help it to be successful and grow.
That is wonderful. And again, I can't agree more, specific because we're seeing so much a shift in on global scene. It's also important to continue, as you said, bringing those innovative solutions and supporting our government and longevity of the country and our future for generations to come, but also finding these solutions in the most challenging and complex times. Seems like everybody's trying to pivot either technologically with technological advancement. And when you mentioned, obviously, manufacturing, supply chain, production, the cost, distribution, it's so many variables that are affecting us that we never really seen as much as they're affecting us today. Because again, we see so many shifts that are affecting not only US, but obviously other parts of the world as well. With that in mind, Lorna, do you mind sharing? Obviously, you lived so many lives already, how much you accomplished and achieved, and just to be again such a strong presence and top-ranking individual and female. And be able to really carve the decades of this work. Seems like you almost, or I would say, accomplished pretty much everything. But I'm curious, what is still in the bucket list? And what would you like to, in this trajectory of your life, to be known for and your legacy to be?
So to still to accomplish, I guess, I just get a lot of joy from helping the companies through the Apex. I like to see them be successful. I just do it part-time because I also want to value the time with my family. You know, we realize that time is short, and so also carving out time for my husband and my daughter. My husband and I love to travel because wherever we go in the world, I find people are the same. You know, everybody wants the same thing. We travel. He has family in Germany. I still have all my family in Ireland. We've been to many, many different countries. And I just love meeting people because they're, you know, you talk to them and they tell you their story. They tell you where they're from, what their children are doing and things like that. And I find people are always friendly. I was someplace in Germany and I was with some family and we were at a picnic and then people were talking and singing. And then I was like, how long have you known these people? I said to people like, we don't know them at all. But people are just so friendly, and people across the world, they all want the same things, really. They want a safe home for their family, food on the table, security, to see their children survive and thrive and grow. And And when you meet the different cultures, you know, there's different food, different music, and it's interesting and exciting. And so I love to travel. That's something that I would want to really continue to do, to meet people. Always connect with my family, whether they're here in the United States. My mom is still in Boston area. My mom, my sister, and my brother. We have family in New York, you know, or overseas. Connect with them. You know, I think the legacy that I would want to leave is that I left the world wherever I was, whether I worked or volunteered, or I volunteered at a school. I'm on a school board here in Colorado, that I left it better than I found it, and that the people that I met, that those people really were better off for having met me and known me, that I wasn't. That I didn't in any way damage. I'm not a perfect person. I'm sure I made mistakes throughout my life and career, but that in many ways that I made their lives better by my presence and not worse in any way. So whether it was professional connections, personal connections, that they felt better for having met me and known me.
That is wonderful, and I'm sure just for a little, just the time frame that I know you, you accomplish already such a tremendous impact on me and my business, and personally, I can't even imagine for people you work for so long in different capacity, and it's just so wonderful to again see exemplary legacy leadership in action. You live it, you lead with it. And you have so much already to call for that you accomplish and achieve that's gonna create this amazing ripple effect. And in closing, Lorna, do you mind just sharing for everybody watching and listening that are going through a lot of shifts and changes, any closing remarks to be able to be as strong, as powerful, and impactful as you are? What would you give them as advice?
I think be patient. You know, things when things look bad, there have been days where I've sat in my car and cried. And there, but you know, as they say, this too shall pass. So sometimes, especially in today's world, you know, there are a lot of challenges. But you know, just realize that things will pass, things will get better. But also, you know, have hope. I think humanity as a whole is good. We are good people. There are sometimes people that are hurt out there that do things, but I think overall we are good people. Listen as much as you can. Sometimes I have that challenge. My husband is a wonderful listener, and I've learned a lot from him. Listen, learn, ask questions, have confidence in yourself. We all bring something to the table. We all bring a wonderful skill, and it's the diversity of our skills that really make us strong. You know, my husband is very quiet. I'm very talkative. You know, it's the mix of everything that really works well. You know, and sometimes by human nature, we tend to seek out people that are similar to us. But I always challenge people, find the people that are different from us, because it's the people that are different, whether as I, you know, work with the SBIR firms like yours, you know, I've never done that. It's the differences that make us strong. It's the differences that make us interesting. And for those engineers that are those rocket scientists, you know, I would say, you know, they live in that lane, and they are, God bless them, they're probably the greatest minds in the United States today. But then they need somebody like me that's kind of like the detail person, you know, the business person. And so it's the mix of all of us that really, so look for diversity, look for people with different perspectives, listen, learn, just keep learning, just keep learning, learning, learning. And when an opportunity opens the door, just like that person said to me many, many years ago when I had just graduated from college, would you be willing to take a 30-day job? take that opportunity and run through that door, because you never know. It was a 30-day job. That's all it was. And it's ended up with this career that I have today. You never, ever know where that opportunity is going to lead. So when that door opens, don't be afraid. Run through it.
Thank you for listening to Legacy Leader Show. If you enjoyed the content and had a positive experience, then please leave us a positive rating. In addition, leave us a positive review whenever you are listening on whatever platform there might be. Make sure your friends and family also know about the benefit and value that we provide and what we have to offer. Cheers.